In July, I was having breakfast on my own in Cape Town, South Africa. The all-black staff waiting on tables and the all-white clientele eating. For those who might not know me, I'm the music director here at South Church. And for the last 20 years plus, I've directed two community groups, Voices from the Heart and Contuti, and we meet here as well. So back to my breakfast. I was finally in South Africa after singing and loving South African songs for 20 years and loving the culture they had grown from. I was ready to enact the mission of Voices from the Heart on this trip. I was ready to connect, to sing, to give. We had raised thousands of dollars to give to various organizations in South Africa. My group of 60 singers would arrive very late that evening. I had come ahead to get the lay of the land. Here I was. I was ready to sing, connect, and give. But suddenly, as I think Sean said, I felt, or maybe Art said, I felt paralyzed. I didn't know how to do it. And I felt alone in a deep darkness of separation. All my worries were rushing back to me. How separate we might feel, what interlopers we might be, what appropriators, would our musical choices be appropriate? Would they hurt people? Would they insult people or make them sad? I felt a great heavy darkness. It was a span of only one breakfast, 20 minutes, my first one here in South Africa. But for me, it was an eternity, an uncrossable separation. And this, feeling this after 2 years of planning, fundraising, and rehearsing for this launching moment. Now, sometime during the last two-year planning period, I'd been driving down that road over there towards the Newington Malls, and Maurice Sendak started to speak to me. Thanks for laughing, Jen. Well, maybe not just to me. Because, in fact, he was speaking directly to people at the Cambridge Forum, and I was listening in via NPR. But he indeed was speaking to me, speaking about his creative process, speaking to me so much I had to pull over. Do you ever listen to the radio, NPR especially, and someone is speaking to you and you can't drive and listen at the same time? It happens to me. So I pulled over, turned the car off, and then Sendak said, Joanne. Creating is willing to take that descent into limbo, to stand on the edge of the cliff and look into the nothingness. You have to dive in. Get wet before you create. Let yourself feel all that is frightening, unknown, dark, shapeless, empty. Let yourself dive into the pool without a net, a life jacket, or a compass. Without being able to see the sides, like the picture on the front of your order of service. Well, I have two sides, maybe more, but I recognize two strong sides. And it's so easy to attend to my organized side, to answer emails, make lists, and better yet, and more fun, check off the lists. I have a vast assortment of colored highlighters. I almost brought them this morning. I'd love to use them to check off the list. I feel accomplished, like my time has been actualized, like I am actualized, accomplished, my day has not been wasted. Look at this piece of paper, look at this list. And then sometimes at dinner, I want to read the list to my husband. After a few years, he said, "We don't need that at dinner anymore." If my creative side and my organized side were my two children, I have to admit I love one more. It's really great to get things done, but I love to swim around in my creative side, attend to it, take the dive is scary. Getting in is scary, frightening. To allow myself the time and space and darkness for creation, creative solutions, feels like I could be wasting time. To visit that part of my brain, my heart, my spirit, my imagination. But it's so delicious. These avenues that can be more hidden, they're harder to access. They might just need space, mere space, or more space and fermentation. I had organized and prepared for this trip for how many years? Two. Music research, language study, making connections, reading, trying to understand the extremely complex history of South Africa, as had my group and its leaders. I took workshops, I sought out conductors, I sought out Black South African directors. But at that moment, faced with the actual South African people that I wanted to connect with, I felt a gulf. My singers would arrive that evening. Everyone I spoke to about the trip had different and often opposing advice. You're thinking of singing Senze Nina? That's too sad for South Africans to hear. You want to sing Somogwaza? No, that's a ceremonial song. It's not appropriate for people outside of South Africa to sing. And after we had prepared the 11-page South African national anthem, sung in four languages with a key change, one of the groups that we prepared to sing with said, "Sorry, we can't sing that with you. It's too controversial right now." Well, back to my breakfast at Cape Town. I was on my third or fourth cup of coffee, and it had started to cool. I was feeling alone in the limbo. The waitstaff was friendly, cordial, but distant. Finally, after sitting in the darkness of my own making, part of me said, "Jump up, run back to your room. You have to plan. You have to check off your checklist. You have to read emails. You have to look at concert programs." I could hop up and get to it, but I sat longer in the murky murkiness, feeling the difficult feelings. And finally, a small idea. I could connect here with this person, this waitress in front of me. I asked Busi, that was her name, what language she spoke. She said English, Afrikaans, and Xhosa, which has clicking. I said, "Busi, do you know the song Tula Sizwe? Tula Sizwe, unga bakala, uja hova wako, zokun kobala." And she did. And she sang it with me right there. I said, "Tomorrow morning we'll sing it again with 60 more people." And the next morning we did. We sang Tula Sizwe with Busi. And all the people who had been distant and cordial and standoffish walked towards us. The wait staff, the kitchen staff came out of the kitchen, surprised, and sang with us. On this trip, yes, baboons would hang out on the porches of our cottages, preventing us from coming out at times. We would present music works with $16,000 for their great work with music and kids in the townships around Cape Town. On the side of the road, we saw ostriches. We would walk elephants with their moist, breathy trunks in our hands. We would sing many concerts. We would give dresses to little girls in shelters. When they put them on, they would discover a toy in one pocket and something practical in the other. We would talk and sing and drum with women in shelters who had experienced abuse. Children of all ages would hug us, and adults too. And yes, at one of the concerts, we would even have the honor of singing for Desmond Tutu. It was amazing. Big. 3 weeks of big. But nothing was more important to me than this connection with Busi, my waitress. It was the deepest, most important part of our trip. It was our connection, our way in. Because of Busi and her willingness to sing to us, we went to every restaurant we went to, all the streets we were on, the coffee shops, the markets, a farm. We sang. And in every one of those places, the kitchen staff would come out. They would not, it wouldn't be just the waitresses. They would hear us and they would come out and they would be like, "How can you know this song?" And they would sing with us. And we would sing more South African songs. And they would dance with us right there in the restaurant. Tula Sizwe became our shared anthem. At the hotel where Busi was my first waitress, a woman made our omelets every day. It was our last day in Cape Town, and one of my singers, Helene, came up to get her omelet. The woman reached out and touched Helene's hand. She said, "This is the first time I have ever heard someone with this skin singing my song." Tula Sizwe, Nkosi Kakulu. Amen. Blessed be.